It is Thursday, June 6, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. KUAF will broadcast Mozart in the Museum live from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art June 24th at 8 p.m. Hosted by Kyle Kellums and Katie Henriksen, this live broadcast will feature the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, interviews, and more. Artisphearefestival.org for more information. Support for this broadcast comes from Cox Communications and the Bentonville Art and Culinary Festival.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we hit the highway in an effort to prevent some serious cracking on I-540. We also hear from a Hawaii congresswoman who's trying to get some funding for Arkansas. Plus, our regular conversations with Becca Martin Brown and Jody Beznoska.
But first, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is close to invoking cloture on the $100 billion a year farm bill. Both of Arkansas's senators, Republican John Bozeman and Democrat Mark Pryor, are supporting the bill. It addresses issues of farm subsidies and crop insurance. But Pryor says about 85% of the bill is directed toward the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP.
I do support SNAP. That is, for those of you who don't remember, that's the food stamp program. We call it SNAP now. And I do support that. And I think the House and the Senate have different numbers. But I do think that one thing we need to remember is the Senate version improves efficiency in the program.
Senator Bozeman says the elimination of automatic enrollment in some states through home heating assistance programs will help make sure help gets to those who deserve assistance.
So as all it's doing is closing that loophole and saving $4 billion so that we can potentially use that money to help those that truly are eligible in the future.
The farm bill calls for $400 million worth of cuts a year to SNAP, which amounts to about half of 1% of the budget under the previous year's farm law. Both Senators Pryor and Bozeman support the reduction in funds.
With the Department of Higher Education confronting a shortfall in its budget for granting postgraduate students money to pursue specialties not offered in-state, Governor Mike Beebe is requesting that lawmakers use rainy day funds to cover the program for one more year. The department normally grants tuition money for Arkansas students who pursue degrees in fields like veterinary medicine, optometry, and dentistry. The financial needs of grant programs have lately exceeded the $28 million allocated by lawmakers. Beebe spokesman Matt DeCampbell says the governor will seek approval for a funding increase of over $1 million for the program.
The catch is this is only for one year. And so the legislature, hopefully in future years, will approve some more funds or will have more revenue available to where these students can continue receiving these grants beyond just their first year, because these are generally four-year degree programs in their postgraduate work.
The Arkansas Legislative Council Peer Review Committee, which meets in July, will decide whether to provide additional funding. Officials at the Department of Higher Education have said a shortfall for the program has existed for a few years, but they have typically used year-end reserves to fill the funding gap.
The U.S. Marshals Museum in Fort Smith is one step closer to having physical museum space. Jessica Hayes, Vice President of Operations for the museum, says the museum's board has set a tentative groundbreaking date of September 24th of next year. But for that to happen, more work must be done.
We've got certain milestones that we need to meet with regard to fundraising. Currently, we've raised $11.7 million towards our project goal of $50 million, which is great progress. But in order for us to actually break ground next fall in 2014, we're going to need to be closer to that project goal.
Hayes says the museum is employing various means to meet the $50 million goal.
There's some new market tax credits that we are fairly confident that we qualify for. There's the commemorative coin that's going to be sold. It gets issued in 2015. It commemorates the 225th anniversary of the Marshall Service. And then we are in the midst of our fundraising campaign. So between now and next fall, we're doing a lot of individual fundraising where we're asking individuals for gifts as well as foundations. And that's something that's going on locally, statewide, and then nationally as well.
Barring any construction delays, Hayes says the museum will tentatively open in September of 2016.
If you've driven near the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville in the past few days, you may have noticed increased traffic due to the Walmart shareholders who are in town for the annual convention. But sidewalk work along Dixon Street is also affecting traffic in that area. Through June 9th, the westbound lane of Dixon will be closed as crews make pavement, curb, sidewalk, and lighting improvements between Bell Engineering and Hillside Auditorium. Beginning Monday, though, both lanes of Dixon will be closed from Bell Engineering to Ozark Avenue. Detour routes around the construction zone will be posted.
Northwest Arkansas-based Arvest Bank ranks highly among banks lending money to U.S. agricultural interests. According to the CityWire, the American Bankers Association ranked Arvest 27th among the 100 largest farm lending operations in the country. Arvest reportedly originated about $452 million in farm loans last year, up about 9% from the previous year. Farm loans have been a growing portion of Arvest's business portfolio during the course of the past half decade. In 2006, the bank originated approximately $227 million in farm loans. Today, 6% of the bank's total loan portfolio is invested in farm lending.
Retired USA Drug founder and Pine Bluff resident Stephen LaFrance died unexpectedly earlier this week. According to Talk Business Arkansas, LaFrance died in his sleep Tuesday night. Last year, he sold his massive USA Drug franchise and warehousing business to Walgreens for $438 million. The transaction included 144 stores operating under various names in Arkansas, Kansas, Mississippi, Missouri, New Jersey, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. He started the chain from a single store in Pine Bluff in the early 1970s. LaFrance was 72 years old.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals had a rough day in Tulsa yesterday. Nats lost to the Drillers 11-1. The Nats are now 16-40 on the season. The four-game set against Tulsa continues tonight at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale.
Expect partly cloudy skies this evening with overnight lows from 52 in Northwest Arkansas to 59 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny with highs from 75 to 81 degrees tomorrow. Mostly clear tomorrow night with lows from 51 to 58.
A U.S. Congresswoman from Hawaii has filed a bill asking for a massive increase in special grant funding to reimburse public spending on Marshallese migrants living in the U.S. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, millions of dollars have been distributed to Hawaii over the years, but not one cent of the grant money has ever reached the mainland, including Arkansas.
Under a Compact of Free Association, first negotiated in 1986, then renewed in 2003, Republic of the Marshall Islands residents are allowed to live and work in the United States for as long as they want. In exchange, we maintain strategic U.S. military operations on the Marshalls, states and territories that host Marshallese, as well as migrants from Palau and the Federated States of Micronesia, are annually reimbursed by the U.S. federal government for health, education, and welfare costs for islanders via what's called compact impact grants, currently capped at $30 million annually. Arkansas is not considered to be an affected jurisdiction, so has never been a recipient of this money, despite having as many as 6,000 islanders settled in Northwest Arkansas, primarily in Springdale. But now a U.S. Congresswoman, for the first time in Compact Impact history, seeks to overhaul the funding formula.
Colleen Hanabusa, I'm the Congresswoman for the 1st Congressional District of the State of Hawaii.
And Congresswoman Hanabusa's home state of Hawaii is a recipient of Compact Impact grants.
But it is, as you are aware, only to Guam, Hawaii, CNMI, and American Samoa were eligible for the what we call the Compact Impact funds.
And the funding formula as it stands is far from adequate, argues Congresswoman Hanabusa.
You know, they've had various amounts attributed to that. The state usually argues about $100 million a year, and we get, you know, a pro rata or per capita distribution of the $30 million. So for most part, they're saying around 90-plus million is borne by the state. But there's also, as you know, a GAO study that looked at this specific issue since 2004, and they said that all the jurisdictions have borne the burden of $1 billion since 2004. Hawaii's percentage of that, this is uncompensated, unreimbursed. Hawaii's burden of that is supposed to be the bulk of it, and I think the percentage was about 60%.
That's why on March 15th, she introduced H.R. 1222, the Compact Impact Aid Act of 2013.
We are seeking that we use the figure of the GAO report and what we were looking at through that piece of legislation is to basically reimburse the states for the costs associated. And as I said, the $185 million was the projected expenses by the GAO as to how much the states were being uncompensated.
Strapped by high unemployment, lack of medical care, and limited education opportunities, thousands of Palauans, Micronesians, and Marshallese are leaving their traditional island homelands in search of jobs, education, and medical care. But once here, they're not privy to entitlements such as Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, or even SCHIP, even though payroll taxes are deducted from their checks. The U.S. Government Accountability Office, or GAO, several years ago tackled an audit of Compact Impact grant funding, revealing the need for spending efficiencies and to increase grant dollars to certain jurisdictions. But for Arkansas to receive a portion, we need to have an accurate headcount of Marshallese here. A 2009 American Community Survey tabulated 1,150, yet a local school district counted 1,500 students that year, children ages 5 to 18, non-adults. The 2010 census reported 4,300, but experts and stakeholders question the veracity of all those census figures. Again, Congresswoman Colleen Hanabusa.
What this stat, this bill is intended to do is that jurisdictions such as Arkansas would be available. Because, you know, the COFA issue, Hawaii alone, for example, health care is $45 million. But it's the total cost, education plus housing, you know, that the state bears in addition to the medical costs.
The GAO report found education, health, and public safety services to Arkansas migrants from 2004 to 2010 is estimated to have cost more than $51 million, $10.5 million in 2010 alone. Congresswoman Colleen Hanabusa is advocating not just for her state, but for all host states reckoning with such costs.
Well, you know, I've introduced this measure in the what we call the 112th Congress as well. And I think the problem that we have seen is getting a hearing on it. And Fisheries, Wildlife, Oceans, and Insular Affairs, which is the subcommittee that would have jurisdiction over this, we have not been able to secure a hearing on it. We felt that at least if we were able to secure a hearing, people could come forward, like from Arkansas or sending a representative, who say exactly what the uncompensated or unreimbursed burden is for the state as well. And, you know, and I hate using the word burden because, let's be very clear, this is a compact, and it is a result of really a wrong committed by the United States and with the testing, the nuclear testing. And I know many of the migrants who are in Arkansas are Marshallese, and we all know Bikini Atoll is still not habitable. And this is an obligation of the United States. The unfortunate part about it is that the states are the ones who are carrying that obligation and not being compensated for it, including Arkansas.
And she's reached out to the Arkansas delegation for help. A query to U.S. Senator Mark Pryor's office yielded no comment. But in an email from John Bozeman's office, a senator who said he's not looked at Hanabusa's bill believes adjusting the funding formula could create an unwanted ripple effect across the tightly negotiated compact. But he remains committed to a fix, he said, considering it's a fairness issue for the state of Arkansas and the Marshallese community residing here. 2 years ago, both Bozeman and Pryor, along with seven other congressional leaders, signed a letter to then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Secretary of the Interior Kenneth Salazar asking them to enact a screening policy to contain sick islanders in the RMI. The Marshallese have the highest incidence of tuberculosis, a lung disease, among Pacific Island nations. Due to processed Western diets, many suffer with severe diabetes and heart disease. and a decade of Cold War atomic and thermonuclear bomb testing, other Marshall studies show, have yielded an increased incidence of cancer. Even Arkansas physicians have noted that islanders, by and large, appear to be immune compromised. In the meantime, the nonprofit community clinic in Springdale provides the girth of medical care to low-income and underinsured islanders. Others routinely resort to hospital emergency rooms. The state health department also pitches in, helping to manage TB cases, provide immunizations, chronic disease intervention, and community outreach. And that's why the congresswoman from Hawaii suggests advocates aggressively pursue compact impact support. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Interstate 540 is the north-south corridor that connects northwest Arkansas to I-40. If you're traveling south on this road, just about a mile before exit 45, the Winslow exit, a wall begins. It separates the lanes and runs pretty much to the Bobby Hopper Tunnel. That's 4.2 miles of concrete. The wall and highway was constructed in 1999. Since then, the concrete in this section has begun to crack. I mean extreme cracking. The Arkansas State Highway and Transportation Department contacted civil engineers at the University of Arkansas to help them repair this problem. Ricky DeShanes is a master's student of science and civil engineering. He specializes in concrete and structural materials, and he's the lead student researcher on this project. I met with him at the wall earlier this week and asked him why the wall was put in to begin with.
For the alignment of the interstate right here, they had to put the two lanes side by side, so they had to put a wall between them to keep, you know, cars from crossing the median if there's ever a wreck. And the wall is made out of the same concrete that the pavement is, and they both developed ASR, alkali silica reaction, and that's what I'm actually studying. And so if you look up further on the wall, there's several sections that have significant cracking. They've deteriorated pretty badly for being a 14-year-old wall.
What Ricky and the research team are looking at is trying different surface treatments to stop the cracking. Replacing the entire wall could prove to be costly and time-consuming, resulting in lane closures for extended periods of time. As he mentioned, the cracking is caused by alkali silica reaction, or ASR. I asked Ricky's research partner, Cameron Murray, to explain.
It's a deleterious reaction that occurs in concrete that contains a cement with a higher alkali content and aggregate that's high in silica. And when the conditions are right, it can cause a lot of expansion.
Concrete is a composite material composed of an aggregate, a coarse granule material like crushed rock or sand. That's mixed with the cement or binder that fills the space among the aggregate particles and glues them together. Silica is a chemical compound that is found in aggregates like quartz and sand. Alkali in chemistry is a soluble salt or a mixture of soluble salts.
So when the highly basic pore solution of the concrete reacts with the silica in the aggregate, it forms this gel, and when the gel comes into contact with water, it expands, and it creates a lot of stress and pressure in the concrete, which can make it crack.
I asked if weather plays a role, like when it's cold and water expands when it freezes, or the incredible amounts of rain we've had lately. Here's Ricky.
Yeah, the water will definitely increase the expansion. So will temperature. So during the summer, once there's a lot of water in the concrete and it starts to heat up, the expansion will increase. And then once the cracking started due to the ASR, in the winter there's a lot of freeze-thaw cycles, and so water gets into the cracks, freezes, expands, and causes the cracks to become even bigger. So a lot of the extreme cracking down further down the wall is due to freeze-thaw. But the beginning of the cracking, the reason the deterioration began, was due to ASR expansion.
This concrete is made from the same materials as the rest of 540 and any other barriers along it. But the cement changes sources, and the manufacturing processes may vary. In this location, the cement and the aggregate were just right for ASR to develop. The cement is higher alkali, and the sand, which came from the Arkansas River in Fort Smith, reacted to that high alkali. Looking at the wall, there are a couple of sections that are a different color, painted white. I first thought that these concrete slabs had been replaced due to the cracking. As it turns out, these portions have been treated with one of the tester solutions.
We have a control section. One section's treated with linseed oil. That's treated with elastomeric paint, which is white. After that, we have a section which is treated with silane. And so all of the treatments work to keep rainwater out and allow the moisture in the wall to escape. And so what we're hoping to do is reduce the internal humidity of the wall below 80%. And we're just testing which treatment works best.
Right now, the humidity level inside the wall is about 95%. Ricky and the research team applied the treatments in March and have been taking readings each month to monitor the changes. That's what they were supposed to be doing the day I met them at the wall. But they require the assistance of the Arkansas Highway Department to shut down the left-hand southbound lane of 540 for obvious safety reasons. However, the Highway Department was busy dealing with flooding issues elsewhere in the state. My requests to talk with them about this story were also left unmet. But Ricky walked me through what taking a reading entails.
So we embedded these gauge studs. They're about 3 inches long. We drilled them in on the four corners of a 500 millimeter grid. And then we have a gauge, it's called a DMET gauge. And we just, we measure between the center of the points and we check how much it's expanded once a month for 9 months. And then we also have the probe we put here where we can measure temperature and relative humidity inside the concrete. And so we'll compare the readings from the initial all the way down to 9 months, and we'll see which section has expanded the least, and then we can conclude which treatment has worked best.
It's only been a couple of months, but they are seeing some expansion. Ricky says right now it's mostly due to the increasing temperatures as summer approaches. When they tackle their final readings in December, when temperatures are back to levels similar to when they took initial readings this January, those measurements can then be compared without heat expansion playing a factor. Scientists and engineers typically work on data and not gut feelings. And if they do, even those are based on research.
There's been a lot of research done on ASR throughout the United States and the world. And so before I started this project, I started out by reading as much of the previous research as I could. And so I really have found a lot of conclusive results on the silane being the best option. But the Highway Department wanted to test some of the materials that have already been used in the past in Arkansas and that are already in their specification. So that's why they asked that we try linseed oil, and that's one of the reasons we also tried the elastomeric paint.
The silane is a hydrocarbon chain that bonds to the concrete, forming a barrier blocking moisture from being absorbed by the concrete. But as a vapor barrier, it still allows humidity to escape. As far as costs go, silane is in the middle. Linseed is the cheapest, and the paint the most expensive.
And of course, there's also a lot of costs associated with actually applying the sealers. So the linseed oil and silane can be sprayed on, and that goes relatively quickly. So that would probably be the cheapest alternative, and then the paint would definitely be the most expensive. So we're hoping that the silane works, but we have to conclude that with research.
And that research will be completed early next year. There has also been a lot of laboratory research to find out which sands and rocks are reactive. They have tested several rock sources from Northwest Arkansas and Central Arkansas, as well as Arkansas River sands from Fort Smith, Pine Bluff, and parts of Oklahoma.
And so we don't have conclusive results on that yet because it takes a full year to run the testing. But preliminary results have shown that some of the sands are expansive, and so in the future, what we're going to work on is developing a new specification with the Highway Department to prevent ASR from occurring, and that will likely use fly ash to add it to the concrete to prevent ASR.
Fly ash is a byproduct of coal power plants. It would replace some of the cement in the concrete mixture, improving the durability properties in the concrete, and it's shown to prevent ASR. Ricky will continue this part of the research as he finishes his master's degree and goes on to get his PhD. Oh, and he recently received the ACI Schwing American Scholarship from the American Concrete Institute to help pay for those studies. This is Ozarks at Large.
Last weekend, Mulberry Mountain sounded like this. This weekend, it will sound more like this.
We got winners, we got losers, chain smokers.
On the heels of a very muddy 10th anniversary of the Wakarusa Music Festival, event organizers have prepared for the inaugural Thunder on the Mountain Country Music Festival. The events were scheduled barely a week apart, and organizers only had a few days between the end of Wakarusa and the start of Thunder on the Mountain to prepare. Festival director Brett Moseman says it's not unusual for festivals to be scheduled close together.
It was always our idea to work off of the infrastructure that was here. You know, you set up the fence lines once and the porta potties and the stages, and in theory, you're doing half the work for each festival. You only have to build both once and you only have to tear both down once. So that was the idea. It's, a pattern that's been used in Coachella to Stagecoach, for instance. So it's not an uncommon idea necessarily. I guess now that you think about it, Stagecoach probably doesn't get 7 or 8 extreme thunderstorms in the desert.
Mulberry Mountain was the site of a number of storms last week. Brett says a big issue they anticipated was getting all of the trash and campers gone in a timely manner. But the weather complicated the cleanup process.
Because of the weather, we have had 100 other issues. You know, we've started really mid last week when the rain first started. We started our emergency preparedness and reclamation plan that has included buying dozens and dozens of dump truck loads of gravel and mulch and straw, and applying all those. And, you know, starting Monday morning, we were tilling the mud to help it dry out, and we'll come back over with gravel and straw, all to make it look pretty for Thunder on the Mountain.
Brett says he's really proud of his staff, who has been working 18-hour days. Brett says Wakarusa had record attendance, and he estimates well over 20,000 people attended the festival. Unfortunately, many of these concert goers left behind several items damaged by the weather that Brett and his crew had to pick up.
We've had to bring in several more vehicles, you know, heavy machinery for trash. And, you know, one just very small sidebar, you know, there are literally 500 to 1,000 of those pop-up tent frames out in the field that just got mangled like a paperclip that typically people pack up and put it back in their trunk and we don't have to pick up. And frankly, they're quite unruly. You know, there's hundreds and hundreds of shoes lodged in the mud, and those all have to be picked up. And so, you know, the cleanup effort was, you know, 4 or 5-fold more than normal. And yet here it is Tuesday afternoon, and I'm looking at clean green fields out at Mulberry Mountain.
Musical performances at Thunder on the Mountain begin today and continue throughout the weekend. Backroad Anthem is a local band participating in the festival. The group recently visited the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and that interview was heard on an earlier edition of Ozarks at Large. During their visit, they played another song that was not included in the earlier broadcast.
All right, here we go. Yeah, this is called Farmtown Get Down, and it's more of our party song, so hope you like it. If you're looking for a good time, baby, right here's where to be. No better feeling in this life than being young and free. It's gonna be a farm town, get down, dancing on truck tailgates. A boot shaking earthquake and sipping up a good old time. Y'all ready for this? Let's go! Gonna spark a little fire and watch it flame up. I'm calling all my friends, circle up our trucks. I'm gonna find me a girl, a southern dip sweet. It's an old farm party, just you wait and see. It's gonna be a farm town, get down, dancing on truck tailgates.
Take County Road 9 around Johnson Mill Bend, past the city limit sign where that blacktop ends. Roll the windows down and follow what you hear. It's that sweet sound coming from a field that's jumping. There's a party going on down here. It's gonna be a farm town. Get down, dancing on truck tailgates, a booze shaking earthquake and sipping up a good old time. Six trains on my left, straight 10 on my right, playing every country song to see a smile tonight. Make the girls tell their friends it's a party, y'all come on round. Tailgates, a booze shaking earthquake and sipping up a good old time. Six trains on my left, straight 10 on my right, playing every country song to see a smile tonight. Make the girls tell their friends it's a party, y'all come on round. Oh, make the girls tell their friends it's a party, y'all come on round. To this farm town, get down.
That was Back Road Anthem inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. You can find out more about Mulberry Mountain's inaugural country music festival at thunderonthemountain.com.
This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, June 6, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas, and here with me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Now, here's a topic that I really like to discuss.
Is it theater?
No.
Oh.
It's ghost hunting.
Okay.
Makes my publisher so nervous. He doesn't believe in ghosts. He doesn't believe that anybody wants to hunt ghosts. But apparently a lot of people do, because there's lots of TV shows about it. And there's going to be a ghost hunters get together at 6 o'clock Monday at Rogue on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
I was going to guess Eureka Springs, but no.
No,
that's
ours.
It is right here in downtown Fayetteville.
They want to find people who want to chase ghosts. It's a group called Eagle's Nest Paranormal, and they're out of Western Washington County. And they're bringing in a speaker named Lisa Martin from Joplin, who has a group called Paranormal Science Lab. And she's had lots of interactions with the major ghost hunting groups coming through Northwest Arkansas. We're not supposed to say ghost hunting. It's paranormal investigation. And she's going to talk about how ghost hunting has become a moneymaker for historic sites. Some of the places they work with are funded entirely by what they make off of ghost tours, which is really kind of cool. They're also going to have equipment to show off, to talk about how you too can ghost hunt. And Eagle's Nest Paranormal is looking for a new member, but I didn't get the parameters of exactly what they're looking for. I'm not sure they know, but you could be it. So you can go to Rogue on Dixon at 6 o'clock on Monday, or you can check out EN, as in Eagle's Nest, ParanormalSociety.com.
Interesting. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. Walton Art Center presents the 13th Annual Art of Wine Festival Thursday, June 13th through Saturday the 15th. These three evenings will feature a winemaker's dinner, tastings featuring over 400 wines from around the world, as well as food from the area's finest restaurants. Art of Wine Festival tickets and more information are available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600.
About half the seafood we eat comes from marine farms, and fish waste from the farms pollutes the environment. So marine species are being brought in that know how to recycle those waste products.
Instead of looking at them as waste, we look at them as nutrients for the next species.
Cleaner Fish Farms today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can listen to All Things Considered this afternoon at 3 o'clock here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The Fayetteville Farmers Market is celebrating a milestone next month, its 40th anniversary. But even before that, there are celebrations at the market on the square for the patrons. Ozarks at-large's Kyle Kellums recently talked to the co-managers of the market, Teresa Maurer and Lori Boatwright, about upcoming days at the market dedicated to some of the most experienced customers and some of the youngest.
School's out, and so, you know, we're ready to have a good time during our weekday markets. On Tuesday the 11th, we will be hosting Senior Citizen Appreciation Day. And it's just a good day for folks to come out. There's free coffee, free lemonade, some music. The lovely Beth Stockdale will be there playing her harp. And we will also be entertained that day by the 106th Army Band. They have different ensembles, and they're going to come and entertain us throughout the day. So it's kind of a fun day to get out and enjoy.
And that's Tuesday the 11th.
Tuesday the 11th, 9 to 12 be when the music and refreshments are being served.
And it's really great timing because the next day, on the 12th, following that event, there's a sign-up for the senior vouchers that are available for seniors to use at market. And if people have already signed up, they can go pick up their booklets. So it's going to be a twofold thing at the Fayetteville Senior Center.
And you just go to the senior center.
You go to the senior center, and if you're not from Fayetteville, you can call your local senior center. But seniors have been asking, and so all you seniors out there that have been wondering, this is the time. You either pick them up or you can sign up to get it if you have not yet signed up.
Yes, 2 to 4:30 on June the 12th at the Fayetteville Senior Center.
65, is that the...
65 and older, and there are some income requirements. Sure. and things like that. So if you have never applied before, you must take photo ID and proof of household income. And the great folks from the Area Agency on Aging will be there to help you get signed up and receive a $50 coupon book to purchase produce at the market.
And then the next day, the 13th, then it's some of your youngest patrons.
It's our Kids Day. It'll be our, I think, our 37th annual Kids Day. And, you know, kids are out of school, and we're just going to have a good time. Market vendors set up an arts and crafts booth, and so there's some hands-on things to do, paint watercolors with the artist of what you see at the market. Feed Fayetteville and Apple Seeds will be there with activities, Ozark Natural Foods and Terra Tots. And Ozark Natural Science Center will also be there with activities for the kids. And there will be lots of things going on. Again, that's 9 to noon as well, that those activity booths open up. And it's just a great day. The other vendors prepare small amounts of merchandise, either their crafts or their produce, for the kids to buy. And we recommend, you know, letting your child have $1 or $3 or $5 and going out and them shopping the market. You know, we tell them to buy something that's purple or buy something that's green or just whatever catches their interest. And it's a great way to get the kids involved and maybe try a turnip or something that they've never tried before.
Heirloom tomato. Is it too early?
Not quite yet. That's okay. There'll be berries of some sort there. Okay. That's a good thing they can look for. Yeah, I know people have been anticipating the tomatoes since day one.
Well, yes.
We all are.
Yeah. So, but it'll be great, and it's just a great way for us to introduce young shoppers to the market and kind of get that habit established early and let them have fun with it, you know, that eating healthy can be fun as well.
Do you notice on Kids Day, are there more kids than a normal Thursday?
Oh, very much so. It's a good time, but it kind of gets people in the habit of coming out during the weekday markets and remembering that we're there, and that now that school's out and you might be looking for some activities, that the market's a good place to do that.
And it's a nice natural transition, too, because we have a local farm-to-school program where kids maybe have been learning about local produce. So this is a sort of out-of-school way for them to get reinforced with some of the things that they're learning in school as well.
Yeah. And with Terra Tots moving to the square, now there's more kids' activities to do during weekdays as well. I think on Thursdays they do kid yoga and some different stuff. So we're just going to have a school's out party.
Well, sounds like fun.
Yeah.
So if we can't see the heirloom tomatoes yet, what can we see at the market?
Well, we're continuing to have, you know, a great selection of greens, both greens that you cook and greens that you put in salad, as we mentioned, the berries. Mm-hmm. And we're also particularly, I sort of feel like this is a cycle coming around. We have a new goat cheese vendor at the market, and this is at the Fayetteville Farmers Market at the Botanical Garden only right now. We're kind of featuring her out there specially. This is a small local dairy, family-run dairy in Elkins, and they are getting set up so that eventually they'll have visitors who can come and watch the cheese making and sample the cheeses and watch the goats being milked. Lori and I went out to inspect the farm recently, and their products are just amazing. And again, we're kind of featuring them out there. And if some of you have been in the Fayetteville area long enough, the goat cheese debates in the early 2000s yes. actually opened the square to much more diverse products, which I think has been great for everybody because we have things like the cheese that can be available throughout the season or at times when we don't have that fresh produce. So you've really got a lot to pick from. I mean, the displays this morning were just gorgeous around two sides of the square during the weekdays. And we want to remind people that we're there in the weekdays. We still have people coming up and saying, oh, you're not just here on Saturdays. So we're here on the square 7 till give us 12:30, you know, so we have a half hour to close up. And then out at the Botanical Garden, we're out there on Wednesday evenings from 4 to 7, where our White River Creamery goat cheese person is. And then she is also out there on Saturday mornings. So if you can't make it to the square, you can come out to the garden and get a nice selection of things out there as well.
Very good. You said this, the Kids Day, which is on Thursday the 13th, is the 37th annual. Wow. Which, and we'll talk about this more in a future visit, but you've got a birthday. The market's got a birthday coming up.
The market is turning 40 this year.
Doesn't look
year.
A day over 25.
Why, thank you. July 6th, we will celebrate the market's 40th birthday. It was originally founded July 3rd, 1973, and so that following Saturday, we're going to have a big birthday bash. Lots of surprises and a good time all day.
All right. Lori, Teresa, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Kyle.
Teresa Maurer and Lori Boatwright are co-managers of the Fayetteville Farmers Market, and they talked to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio.
It is Thursday, June 6, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. Joining me now is Jody Beznoska. She is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hello.
Hi. Can you
got
believe
it right.
Yeah, I did. Can you believe it's June 6?
No. No, I'm wondering where May went, but there was a lot of stuff that happened in May, so I guess, you know, it was a good May, right? But man, gosh, it's June.
I know.
We're almost to the end of our year at Walton Arts Center, which is crazy. But we have a lot happening before that year ends. But right now we're just in planning mode. We're getting ready for next weekend.
So this weekend is quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, relatively quiet.
Mm-hmm.
At least nothing open to the public.
Right.
And then next weekend is Art of Wine.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. And Art of Wine is our major fundraiser for our arts and education programs at the WAC. It's a three-day festival. It starts on the Thursday, which I think is the 13th. Hold on, I'm looking at your calendar. Yes, Thursday the 13th will be our first event.
Okay.
And that's our big winemaker's dinner. That's the big party on the stage where we serve a five-course meal prepared by Chef Lyle from Ella's, or Chef Bill Lyle from Ella's Restaurant.
I love Bill.
Yeah, he does a great job, and he works with our guest winemaker to pair up the courses. And then this year we also have a special treat, literally, that night. We will have the Ghirardelli chocolatier will be in town, and he will be working with the chef and I think with others to help craft a really special dessert for that dinner.
And it's actually on the stage.
It is, yeah. It's one of the more it's really special to be sitting on the stage. Basically what happens is our tech crew goes into overdrive and they actually build out the stage. They build the platforms out so they go out over the seats so we can seat people. And there's special lighting and you know, we just, and all the serving actually happens on the stage. And it's very magical to be sitting up there, you know, under the lights like so many artists have. Yeah. It's really cool. So that is Thursday.
Okay.
And then Friday is the first big wine tasting of the weekend. This one is called Uncorked. And this is more of the social party kind of event. There are over 400 different wines that you could potentially taste. I don't recommend trying. Otherwise,
all of them?
Yeah, not generally a good idea. And then there's food from 12, I believe, at least 12 of our local restaurants from Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, and Bentonville. They all come down and they donate their time and their staff and their food to help us make the event work.
And so this one, you just kind of wander around mm-hmm. the entire center mm-hmm. and just get to taste wine, pick mm-hmm. up food.
Yep.
In all areas, right?
In all areas. Yep.
I mean, even backstage.
You might get a glimpse.
Yeah.
But generally, backstage is sort of chaotic with people running around trying to make sure there's mm-hmm. enough wine out there. But you can have wine on the stage. There's wine in Star Theater. There's food and wine in McBride Studio. And there's usually even stuff out in the lobby itself. But yeah, the whole place just gets taken over. There's something like 60 different tables, and it's pretty intense. There's a lot of wine that you could taste. And all of it is donated by the wine distributors and their labels, which is really remarkable. So that's the Friday night event. I believe that one starts at 6 p.m. I think tickets for that are $85. And then the Saturday night event is the more exclusive kind of reserve wine night. It's called the Premier Tasting. We sell fewer tickets to that, and we have fewer wines, but they are top notch. Yeah, they're reserve wines. They're more expensive, and they're really a little bit more, you know, they're handpicked by the vintners. And you also have food from the restaurants that night as well. So that night is more. It's a little bit less chaotic. It's a little less crowded in the space. If you're really serious about the wine, that's the night you should come. The ticket is more expensive. I think it's $150. Mm-hmm. But all the proceeds for this go to support the Walton Arts Center and our programs.
Because Walton Arts Center is a nonprofit.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't know that about us. You know, they assume that, you know, because we bring in Broadway shows that we're a commercial entity. But that's not true. We raise half of our budget every year from events like this and from donors and sponsors and grantors. So it's a really great opportunity for us to have a really good party, but you can feel great about where the proceeds of, you know, your ticket are going, because they're literally going to help bring the programs that people love. You know, the 10 by 10 art series that we spend so much time talking about, that's a fully subsidized program. We lose lots of money on that, but we want to do it because it's important, and it's, you know, we want people to have a chance to experience that art. So we have events like this right. to help make that happen.
Good deal.
Yeah, and then we have, you know, a quick couple days off, I think, and then we're off into round two of Artisphere. I know we're going to have lots of time to talk about that, but I did just want to get a couple dates on people's calendar. On Sunday, the 16th of June, which is literally 2 days after Art of Wine, or 1 day after Art of Wine, we'll be at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville with the Dover Quartet. They're terrific. They're young. They're really good. Most of them are the principals of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra, who will be coming in a couple of weeks, you know, who'll be coming and performing
okay.
after that.
Okay.
And they'll be doing that at St. Paul's at 7 o'clock on Sunday, the 16th of June. And then the following evening, they will be at Thorn Crown Chapel in Eureka Springs at 7, and they'll be playing Haydn and Brahms, two string quartets. Yeah, those are our first two concerts. And then Wednesday the 19th, we will have another quartet group out at the Cooper Chapel in Bella Vista. And then that weekend, the 20th, 21st, 22nd, is massive and full of all kinds of good stuff. On the 20th, we'll have two events going on. That's a Thursday. We'll have a film night in Star Theater starting at 7:30, where we'll show three short films from some of our Artisphere artists, which is going to be really cool. That's free and open to the public. And also that night, our orchestra musicians will be migrating their way around Dixon Street through the restaurants and pubs for our second Artisphere Festival pub crawl.
How funny.
Yeah, which is great. You'll get to hear music in those settings, which will be great. Lots of concerts going on. We'll talk about that. But really, I wanted to get those chamber music concerts on your calendar, because they are going to be very special.
Okay.
And best musicians you'll hear in a while, I think.
All right. People can find out more?
Yes. More information is available at artistfairfestival.org. You can also go to waltonartcenter.org and click on the Artistfair link at the top of the page. And you can also call us at 443-5600 or just stop by and see us. Parking is free in the lot across from us until 2 o'clock.
Okay. Thanks, Jody.
Thanks.
Jody Besnoska is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Rimsky-Korsakov, Manuel Infante, and Niccolo Paganini, three composers with a lot of flair. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Note, which airs the best in classical music Monday through Friday from 11 to noon right here on KUAF Public Radio. Join me for work from these three composers on Fridays of Note. That's coming up Friday from 11 to noon on KUAF and streaming online at KUAF.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
The 63rd Annual Opera in the Ozarks is June 21st through July 19th at Inspiration Point near Eureka Springs. The 2013 productions include Madame Butterfly, Pirates of Penzance, and Elixir of Love. Sunday performances will be held at the Arend Arts Center in Bentonville, June 30th, July 7th, and 14th at 4 p.m. Tickets and more information are available at opera.org.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Waldron.
Waldron. Mm-hmm. Familiar with that. That's near Fort Smith.
It's south. Mm-hmm.
South of Fort Smith.
Yeah.
Okay. Good deal.
Familiar with that one.
Okay. Did want to mention tomorrow evening, as part of the Big Picture House movie series at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville, they will be screening Rollerball tomorrow night at 7:30.
I haven't seen this movie, but you've talked to me about it before because you actually know a little bit about the story behind it?
I do. Well, Bill Harrison, who actually, he was a creative writing professor at the University of Arkansas for years and years. He actually started the creative writing program.
Oh.
But he wrote Rollerball. And
as a book or as a movie?
It was actually a short story that was in a men's magazine.
Oh, how fun.
So, and then it turned into this movie. And so Bill has really these great stories of, being in L.A. and working on this movie. And he's a really great man. He's my boyfriend's father. But,
okay.
But yeah, or grandfather, not father. Yeah. but yeah, so that's tomorrow evening. And I think Bill will actually be there and talk about the movie a little bit. So.
Have you ever actually watched it?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
And I'm sure he talks about it sometimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fun.
So, yeah. In their living room, there's a big, it's the Rollerball fist. It's this kind of iron fist with spikes on it. So
I'm familiar with the movie. I have not seen it, but I've seen, again, bits and pieces enough to know kind of what it is.
Yeah.
One other event happening tomorrow that I wanted to mention, the Relay for Life of Washington County is scheduled for 6 o'clock at Shiloh Square in downtown Springdale. This annual event raises money for the American Cancer Society, and you can find out more information at relayforlife.org.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And we will be back tomorrow together.
You'll
be here.
I will be here.
I'll be at the shareholders meeting.
You will, but I will be talking to you, so you'll be on the air.
Right. And another thing to mention, in case you've noticed that Kyle Kellums has not been on air this week, I wanted to let everybody know that he is okay.
He's okay. Just a reminder, he is on vacation for 2 weeks in Iceland. So he will return after a lovely trip overseas, I'm sure, full of lots of stories. But until then, we will hold down the fort for him.
Okay. Again, we'll be back tomorrow for an all-new daily edition of Ozarks at Large.
Happy Thursday.